"What river is that?" Kurtz asked. They stood on the peak and looked down from the mountains over endless plains and vistas of rolling grassland to another range of hills pale against the milky blue of the tall African sky at noonday. "It is called the River Charib," Hoffel translated, "or in the language of the San, Charib Chetabong, the river where the elephant died." "Why is it called that?" Kurtz wanted to know. "It was on the banks of this river, when he was a young man, that Tria slew the great elephant he had followed for many days." Kurtz grunted. Since the bushman had found the spoor again, Kurtz was more kindly disposed towards him. He had treated his burns and other injuries from the field chest of medicines he carried on the pack horse. Tria healed quickly, the way a wild animal does. "Tell him that if we can find where Samoya crossed this river, I will give him a fine cow as his own animal when we return to the colony. Then, if he can lead me to the capture or the killing of Samoya, I will give him 5 more fat cows." Kurtz was now regretting his previous harsh treatment of the bushman. He knew that if he wanted to catch up with the fugitives, he must make amends and buy back Thea's loyalty. Thea received this promise of wealth joyfully. Few men of the San owned a sheep, let alone a single head of kine. Childlike, his memory of abuse faded with the offer of reward. He stared down the mountain slope towards the plains and the river with such alacrity that even on horseback Kurtz was hard-pressed to keep him in sight. When they reached the river, they found wild game concentrated on these waters in numbers that Kurtz had not imagined possible. The herds within the colony had been hunted extensively since the first Dutch colonists under Governor van Riebeeck, and set foot ashore almost 80 years before. The burghers were all enthusiastic hunters, indulging in the pastime not only for the thrill of the chase, but also for the meat, hides, and ivory it yielded. Within the borders of the colony at any time of day one could hear the boom of their long roers, and in the season of the great animal migrations across the plains they had organized themselves into large mounted parties to hunt the wild horses, the quagga for their hides, the springbuck and eland for their meat. After one of these great yachts, the vultures darkened the sky with their wings, and the stench of death hung in the air for months thereafter. The bleached bones lay like banks of snowy arum lilies gleaming in the sunlight. As a consequence of these predations, the game had been severely reduced in numbers, and even the quagga had become something of a rarity within the immediate environs of the town and castle. The last elephant herds had been driven far from the frontiers of the colony almost 40 years before, and only a few hardy souls occasionally made the journey of months, and even years, into the remote wilderness to pursue them. In fact, not many white men had ventured even thus far from the safety and security of the colony, which was why this mighty gathering of wild beasts was a revelation to Kurtz. Game had been scarce in the mountains, and they were hungry for fresh meat, so Kurtz and Odermann spurred ahead of the rest of the troop. Riding hard, they caught up with a herd of giraffe, who had been grazing on the top branches of an isolated clump of acacia trees. These gigantic creatures ran with a ponderous swaying motion, twisting their bushy tails up onto their haunches. They thrust their long, sinuous necks forward, as though to counterbalance their massive bodies. Kurtz and Odermann cut a young cow out of the herd of a dozen, and riding hard at her heels, with the stones and pebbles flung up by her hoofs whizzing past their ears, they fired into her rump, trying to send a ball through the ridge of her spine, which showed clearly under her dappled brown and yellow skin. At last Kurtz pressed in so close to her that he almost touched her with the muzzle of his musket, and this time the ball flew true. It severed her spinal column, and she collapsed in a cloud of dust and debris. Kurtz dismounted to reload, and as soon as his weapon was recharged, he ran close to her. She was thrashing about weakly, but he avoided the convulsive kicks of her long front legs, which could snap the spine of an attacking lion. Then he fired another ball into the back of her skull. That night, while the hyena squalled and squabbled with the pride of lions for possession of what remained of the colossal carcass, Kurtz and his men feasted around their campfire on marrow from the giraffe's thigh bones. They cracked the roasted bones between two rocks, and out slid long cylindrical lumps of the rich yellow marrow, as thick as a man's arm and twice as long. In the dawn, when Kurtz awoke, he found Hoffel, who was on sentry duty, fast asleep. Trier was gone. Raging, Kurtz booted Hoffel in the stomach and crotch, then laid into him with a bridle, swinging the bit end and the metal cheek buckles across his shoulders and close-cropped scalp. At last he stepped back and snarled, "Now take the spoor and catch that little yellow ape, or there'll be another helping of ginger for you." Trier had made no attempt to cover his tracks, so even Hoffel could read them easily. Without breakfast, they mounted up and rode after Trier before he could make good his escape. On the open plain, Kurtz hoped to spot him at a distance, and even a bushman could not hope to outdistance a good horse. Trier's tracks led straight towards the dark green ribbon of riverine bush on the horizon that marked the course of the Charib River. They were only halfway there when Kurtz saw the springbuck herds ahead pronking, leaping high in the air with all 4 feet together and noses almost touching their front hoofs, the snowy dorsal plumes flashing in full display. "Something's alarming them," Hoffel said. "Maybe it is the bushman." Kurtz spurred forward. Then, through the dust kicked up by the antics of the springbuck herds, he saw a tiny familiar figure trotting towards them. "By the breath of Satan," Kurtz swore, "it's him. It's here. And he's coming back." As he came towards them, Trier broke into a dance and a litany of triumphant self-congratulation. "I am Trier, the greatest hunter of all my tribe. I am Trier, the beloved of the ancestors. My eyes are like the moon, for they see all, even in the night. My arrows are swift as swallows in flight, and no animal may run from them. My magic is so powerful that no man may avoid it." That same day, Trier led them to the Charib River, and he showed Kurtz the wheel ruts of many wagons scored deeply into the soft alluvial earth along its banks. 4 great wagons and 1 small one passed this way." Through Hoffel he explained the sign to Kurtz. "With the wagons were many animals, horses and cattle and some sheep. See here. The small wagon has turned towards the colony, but the 4 great wagons have gone on into the wilderness." "Whose wagons are these?" Kurtz asked him. "In all the colony there are few burghers rich enough to boast 5 wagons. One of those is Klebe, the father of Samoya." "I do not understand," Kurtz shook his head. Hoffel explained, "It seems that while Bakat and Samoya led us on a chase through the mountains, Klebe came here to the Charib with these wagons. When Samoya had stolen our horses and knew we could follow him no further, he came back here to meet his father." "What of the small wagon that went back towards the colony?" Kurtz wanted to know. Trier shrugged. "Perhaps after he had given the great wagons to his son, Klebe returned to the Cape." Trier touched the wheel marks with his toe. "See how deeply the wheels have bitten into the earth. They are heavily laden with goods." "How does Trier know all this?" Kurtz demanded. "Because I am Trier, with eyes like the moon that sees all." "That means the little bastard is guessing." Kurtz lifted his hat and wiped the sweat from his balding pate. "If we follow the wagons, Trier will give you proof," Hoffel suggested. "Or if he does not, you will shoot him and save yourself the cattle you promised him." Kurtz replaced his hat. Despite his forbidding expression, he felt more confident of eventual success than at any time since they had left the colony. "It's plain to see that they are carrying much cargo," Kurtz thought. "It may be that those wagons are worth almost as much as the bounty money itself." He looked towards the heat-shimmering horizon where the tracks led. "Out there there is no civilized law. Head money or cargoes, one way or the other, I smell a sweet profit in this." He dismounted and inspected the wagon tracks more closely, giving himself time to think. "How long since the wagons passed this way?" Hoffel referred the question to Trier. Some months. It is not possible to say more than that. But wagons travel slowly, while horsemen travel fast." Kurtz nodded to Hoffel. "Good. Very good. Tell him to follow and find proof of who these wagons belong to. They found proof 100 leagues further and 12 days later. They came to a place where one of the wagons had run into an ant-bear hole and been badly damaged. A number of the spokes in one of the front wheels had been shattered. The travellers had camped for some days at the site of the accident, making repairs to the wagon. They had whittled and shaved new spokes and discarded the damaged ones. Theo retrieved one of the broken pieces from where it had been thrown into the grass. He cackled with triumph. "Ha-ha! Did not Theo tell you this truth and that truth? Did you believe him? No! You did not believe him, you stupid white maggot!" He brandished the broken spar. "Know now, once and for all time, white man, that Theo sees all and knows all." He brought the fragment of the spoke to Kurtz and showed him the design that had been burnt into the wood with a branding iron. "Do you know this picture?" he demanded. Kurtz grinned wolfishly and nodded with recognition. It was the stylized picture of a cannon, a long 9-pounder on its carriage. In the ribbon below it were the letters CBTC. Kurtz had seen the same design on the flag that flew above the godown at High Weald and on the pediment above the front wall of the main building. He knew that the initials stood for Courtney Brothers Trading Company. He called his troopers and showed them the fragment of wood. They passed it from hand to hand. They all knew the design. The entire population of the colony was less than 3,000 souls, and within its boundaries everyone knew everything about everyone else. After Governor van der Witten himself, the Courtney brothers were the richest, most influential men in the colony. Their coat of arms was almost as well known as that of the VOC. The brothers emblazoned it on all their possessions, their buildings, ships, wagons. It was the seal they used on their documents and the brand on their horses and livestock. There was no longer any doubt of the identity of the wagon train they were following. Kurtz looked over his band and picked out Richter. He tossed him the broken spoke. "Corporal, do you know what that is that you are holding?" "Yes, Captain, sir, it's a wheel spoke." "No, Corporal," Kurtz told him. "That is thousands of guilders in gold coin in your hand." He looked from the two white faces, Odermann and Richter's, to the yellow and chocolate ones of Clear and Hoffel and the other Hottentots. "Do any of you still want to go home? Unlike that miserable bastard Lerisch, this time I will let you take your horse when you leave. The reward money is not all that we will win. There are 4 wagons also and a herd of domestic animals. Even Kier will win more than the 6 head of cattle I promised him. The rest of you, do any of you want to go home, yes or no?" They grinned at each other like a pack of wild hunting dogs with the smell of a wounded quarry in their nostrils and shook their heads. "Then there is the girl. Would any of you black bastards like to play with a white girl with golden hair?" They burst into laughter at the suggestion, lewd and loud. "I must apologize, but one of you will not have that pleasure." He looked them over thoughtfully. There was one Hottentot trooper whom he would be pleased to see the back of. His name was Mina, and he had a squint. This gave him a sly, villainous expression, which Kurtz had realized reflected accurately his true nature. Mina had sulked and whined ever since leaving the colony, and he was the only one of the troop who was exhibiting no enthusiasm for following the tracks of Jim Courtney's wagons. "Mina, you and I are brothers of the warrior blood." Kurtz placed his arm around the man's shoulders. "So it grieves me sorely that we must part. However, I need a good man and true to carry a message back to Colonel Kaiser at the castle. I have to let him know of the success of our expedition. You, my dear and stalwart Mina, are the man for that job. I shall ask the Colonel to reward you handsomely. Who knows? You may have some gold braid upon your sleeve and gold in your pocket from this day's work." Kurtz hunched over his grubby notebook for almost an hour as he composed the message. He knew that Mina was illiterate. After extolling his own achievements in the conduct of the expedition, the final paragraph of his report to Colonel Kaiser read, "The trooper who carries this message, Johannes Mina, lacks any soldierly virtues. It is my respectful recommendation that he be stripped of rank and privilege and discharged from the company service without benefit of pension." And that, he thought with satisfaction when he folded the message, takes care of any obligation I might have to share the bounty with Mina when I bring Jim Courtney's head back to the colony. You have only to follow the wagon tracks, and they will lead you back to the Cape of Good Hope, he told Mina. Thea says it is less than 10 days' ride. He handed the message, and the broken wagon spoke to Mina. Give these both to Colonel Kaiser in person. Mina leered and went with alacrity to saddle his horses. He could hardly believe his good fortune in escaping this dreadful journey and being offered a reward for doing so.